Hello, everyone, and welcome back as Richard Lanham for Set for Success, where we help you create a roadmap to transform your business, career, or life. Over the course of my life, I've owned 5 houses. My wife and I often refer to our life periods by the color of our house. So we know whatever the color of the house is, what was going on in our life that time. Was it the White House or the Green House, the Blue House, or the White House again, and the Gray House? Yes, we've had 2 White Houses. I like saying that. I had a White House. Our homes, we bought and renovated ourselves and myself. And every 5 years or so, we sold them. And then we just basically upgraded and got into our next level of home, you know. And as our kids got older, we realized that we needed to move. So interestingly, that home location, we sort of based on our kids' needs, particularly the neighborhood and the schools that we're going into. So our family moved again. As we looked to what we wanted to do or decide to do or what have you, we considered hiring a contractor because at one time we actually built a home. So we got passive family homes, we built a home, the dream home. That was an experience in itself dealing with contractors. Now our kids have grown and we've moved to a different family reason. Eventually we decided to live in a mature Beltline neighborhood where we could walk to cafes and restaurants and maybe where we didn't have to use the cars so much, which is very true. We actually drive a little bit less now. And that's actually a pretty good thing to do. But most of the homes we lived in, like I said, were 5 years and I renovated them myself as I'm really handy. Then I sold them usually for a profit after 5 years from there. And then I upgraded them to another one to eventually came down the other side. Now we're talking about the next level of real estate. Real estate as almost an investment adventure, you know, mostly from an entrepreneurial perspective. So in this case, you know, do you buy another home and rent it out or you buy it and renovate it and flip it, which I suspect that has some challenges. You know, what do you do? What about for retirement? Can you actually do something like this to create a retirement income for yourself or maybe just a second stream? And how do you go about investing in real estate when it's for investment purposes? Do you use your RSPs? I don't know, right? Or is it too late to get into real estate? You know, maybe that's a question at a certain point in your life you got to ask. Or should you actually get in there when you're a little bit younger? I don't know. I've invited my friend back, Stefan. And now Stefan is a real estate investor, author, and a small business with a big profit success. And he is local. He is from Manitoba. He is from Winnipeg. Stefan, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You know, I hesitated, Stefan, to actually pronounce your last name because we went through this once before. How do you pronounce your last name?
Arnio, it's Arnio. Finnish.
Arnio. And that's what I did previously. But I hesitated because those 2 A's at the beginning always get me a little bit messed up. What's the history of your last name?
It's from Finland. On my dad's side, he was Swedish, and they moved to Finland, and they changed their name to a Finnish name to avoid persecution.
Oh, wow. A couple of families in the world do that. I think that would be a whole history in itself, and I probably would like to talk about that. But, you know, I started opening up talking about real estate a bit. Tell us a bit about your foray into real estate. You're a young guy.
Well, I just turned 30, so I'm the youngest of the old people now.
You're the youngest of the old people now, yeah. Don't trust anybody over 30.
That's right. Yeah, I guess my ambition started when I was 16. I wanted to be a rock star, and I wanted to be rich and famous. And for a time, I had a couple rock bands. I remember in 10th grade, I was in 10 different bands, and I was playing music. And eventually I went down the path of going into university, studying music in university, playing professionally, making a living out of music. And then I got to the point where I realized I was about 22 years old. I wanted to move out of my mom's house one day. I maybe wanted to own a car and maybe own a house. And maybe the music dream in, you know, the year 2008 was becoming irrelevant in the market economy. So I started to study real estate. I started to go to seminars. I started to invest into myself, and today, 8 years later, I've reached a point of success, and you know, I'm doing a good number of deals, raised a lot of money, and I fly all across the country speaking and teaching about real estate.
Yeah, you do. You do spend a lot of time going all over the place, and just watching your posts and everything on social media, and no doubt, I want to talk to you a bit about that too. Your foray into real estate. Now, I sort of mentioned in my opening, you know, should you buy, should you renovate, should you flip, should you buy and rent? I mean, you have a particular focus on real estate in our marketplace, don't you?
I do a lot of buy, fix, sell.
Buy, fix, sell?
I like buy, fix, sell. Some people call it flipping. I like that because, I do it for income purposes. And then I also have a rental portfolio that I own for, you know, investment purposes and long-term wealth. And, You know, I teach other people how to buy, fix, and sell real estate as well. I think it's a great way to make a little bit extra money. And, you know, your question, does it make sense to own or rent? That's a big debate.
Yeah,
and
it is.
I think a lot of the money made, like, you know, Rich, are you a baby boomer? Do you fit into that?
I actually am a Generation Xer cusper. So I'm the oldest Generation X.
Okay, so... You know,
so I have all the attitude to go with it.
Yeah, exactly. Gen X, man. Well, I'm a millennial, and I think millennials are getting really screwed on a lot of things. But the baby boomers and the Gen Xers got to ride the wave of the baby boomers buying homes. You know, if you look at diapers in the 50s, if you look at minivans in the 90s or stocks in the 90s or homes in the 90s, the baby boomers were all buying homes at the same time. So that drove the market up. And the market's gone up, 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 up. And Winnipeg's gone up for 25 years. A lot of markets have gone up with the baby boomers buying homes. But now if you look at the demographics, you've got the millennials. Millennials are poor. And if you look at some of these neighborhoods where the baby boomers live, you know, it's like a Linden Woods where it's $500,000 to buy a house. Mom and dad are going to move out of that. The kids can't afford to move into it. So I don't know if it's going to make sense to own a home in the next little bit. It might make more sense to rent. And certainly in the United States right now, it makes more sense to rent a home than to own a home, because just because you own it doesn't mean it's going to go up in value over time. It might make more sense to keep your cash and invest the cash into other investments and rent your home, because then the landlord has all the problems and you don't have the problems.
So that's something actually for people looking to get into the market to consider at this point in time.
Yeah. I mean, I own lots of real estate, and my own home, you know, it's funny. My own home has a leaky roof right now. That's 10 grand. And
yeah,
the basement, the finished basement just leaked. Well, that's 30 grand. And yeah, then we fixed that and it's still leaking. So, you know, you look at that, and if I was a tenant, if I was paying $1,000 a month as a tenant or whatever, I'd pay $1,200, $1,500, that'd be $50,000 of liability on the landlord, but I'm the owner. I own it, so I have to take care of it.
You got to fork it out yourself.
Exactly.
To pay that. You know what we'll do? I actually like this train of thought, especially in the terms of owning a house and then the fact that the money that you have to put into it when you own it. Maybe what we can do is when we come back from our break, we'll discuss that a little bit more in the impact and maybe give our listeners some options of what they might want to do with their real estate. This is Richard Lannon for Set for Success, and we'll be right back. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. It's Richard Lannon. I know it was just said. I'm hanging out here with my friend, Stefan Arneau. Stefan, I met him some years ago, actually, as a real estate investor and locally, plus also he's doing work around North America, I think, Stefan. Is that fair enough to say?
Oh, I'm flying all the time, even in the UK.
Even in the UK now. Maybe we can get into that in a little bit, what you're seeing on a global basis. Just before the break, we were talking about, should you own a house now or should you rent? And you were making the argument that, well, I'm going to put it down that a house can be a money pit if you don't have the money to put into it. Is that a fair enough statement?
Well, a house is a money pit, period.
is a money pit, period?
Yeah. Any house is a money pit, absolutely.
Okay. So what makes a house a money pit? Why don't we start there?
Well, I mean, if we want to get technical with it, a house has a 25-year lifespan. Right?
Okay.
After 25 years, everything in the house is done. So if you're going to flip real estate, you want to buy something that's at least 25 years old, because everything in the house will be finished. You know, the everything cosmetic will be out of date. Everything needs to be changed. Pretty much everything in the house is depreciated. And to prove that point, the bank typically, traditionally, would finance a 25-year mortgage because they know at the end of 25 years, the house is not worth much. The land is worth the money.
Yeah.
And the government lets you depreciate 4% a year for rental purposes. So the government and the banks believe it's a 25-year lifespan on the building, the house itself. And, you know, if you want to do the math, you're depreciating it for 4% a year. So you have a lot of things to repair over time. And, you know, do the math, that's a lot of repairs. So what I'm saying is, you know, people have traditionally thought that the house is an asset. They traditionally thought that the house is always going to go up. They're always going to make money. In Winnipeg, we've been spoiled for 25 years. We had a great run. Just because we've had a great run doesn't mean that run's going to keep going. And there's times where it's better to rent and there's times when it's better to own. And we might be going into a time now where it's better to rent. And in the United States, since, you know, 2008, it's been better to rent than to own in a lot of places.
Okay. So are you suggesting then that you think that the market is going to crash or adjust itself?
Well, if you look at history, every presidential election in the States usually has some problems. You know, that's where they let the cat out of the bag when it's between presidents. You know, when Obama came in, we had a lot of problems in 2008. Obama's leaving now. Whoever gets in, whether it's President Trump or President Clinton, they're probably going to let a bunch of cats out of the bag when that transition happens. And I think that helps avoid the blame of who caused the problem. You know, a lot of these problems are old problems that have gone on for a long time, but that's usually when they let the crashes happen.
So we're probably seeing a bit of an adjustment going on, is what you're suggesting. It's interesting you would say that, because during the break we were talking a little about equity markets, and I had said to you that, you know, the big money right now is going in cash and moving somewhat out of the market. So you're suggesting that maybe it's a good opportunity to go with cash in terms of your real estate?
Well, cash is always good. I mean, the tough thing about real estate is you don't know if you can liquidate it. That's the tough part about real estate. Like, if you want to sell it, that's great, but you need a buyer, and the buyer needs financing.
Yes.
So it's reliant on, is there a buyer, and can the buyer get financing usually? So yeah. There's two things there. And cash is always great. If you're in cash, cash is king. And a lot of people are going into gold and silver too, which is another form of liquidity and another form of cash.
Yeah, okay. So that's pretty good to consider getting into. How about for the first, so your whole thing is buy, fix, sell. Okay, that's mm-hmm. Right. And I know you have rental properties too, as you mentioned. If somebody's new and they want to get into real estate as either a second income or an opportunity for their retirement, whatever it might be, what is their best foray into the world of what you do?
Well, I think if somebody wants to jump into real estate as an investment, I think you got to get a couple books. You got to read some books. You got to go to some seminars. You got to get educated first, because a mistake in real estate could be $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $100,000. I mean, I think I've made a $100,000 mistake now in real estate. And if you're not educated, even if you are educated, you could still make mistakes.
Make a mistake.
So education, I think, is first. And then once you've done that, I mean, people either do a buy, fix, sell. They'll buy a little home, fix it up and sell it. Or typically they'll buy a little rental property when they start out. That's usually the two things that people do when they start out. And I don't know if those are right or wrong, but I think you'd certainly need the education first so you kind of know what's going on. And I don't think you can rely on your realtor to educate you, because he makes a commission whether you buy or, well, no matter what you buy, he's going to make commission, so he doesn't care what you buy.
Yeah, yeah. So that would be one of the challenges. And I think that's in any service you buy, you always have to ask yourself, how is this person being compensated for doing mm-hmm. business with me? Because you always have, well, if you're the vendor, you always have an interest in terms of how your payout is, you mm-hmm. know, and how that's going to work. I know that you do a lot of investing, or I was reading up something on your site where you bring investors together. How does that all work? What's that process like?
Well, I work with mostly rich people, so accredited investors, and these are rich people or friends and family. And there's people who want the benefits of investing in real estate. They maybe want the returns of flipping houses, or they want the returns or the benefits of owning rental property. But the problem with property is it's a lot of work. So someone has to do the work. And, you know, I brought you a copy of my book here, the $5 million book, which talks a little bit about there's an active partner and a passive partner. What I've done traditionally over the last 8 years, I'm the active partner, and my team and I have to deal with all the active parts of the business, which is a lot of work. And then the passive partner usually brings money, and they get to sit back and collect the check
at the end of it. I like your philosophy about that. Everybody gets paid. So I've been reading up on you a bit, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I mean, I like to read up on my guests, and you have I noted that you have this philosophy that everybody gets paid.
Well, you got to pay everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how you run a business. It's interesting. You meet people and they say it's hard getting good help. You meet an entrepreneur and they say it's hard getting good help. Well, they're not paying enough. That's probably simply it. You know, you're not paying enough. And I've been stingy with people in the past who worked for me. And typically the cure for that is just pay people a little bit more and then they do a good job. Okay. On the flip side of that, you could also pay and get nothing, which is, you know, a whole nother kettle of fish.
Yeah, I guess people can run into that sometimes too. I want to dive in a little bit more into, and we'll come back to your book in a moment and maybe in the next segment, but I want to dive into a little bit more in, you say you actually work with rich people to come to the table to help invest in real estate, but I'd like to know a little bit more about what the average type of investment would be. Maybe we can talk a bit about that. This is Richard Land for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. It's Richard Land for Set for Success, and I am chatting today with Stefan Arnault, a investment guru in the real estate industry. He's involved in the area of buying and fixing homes and flipping them, and also rental and getting into real estate investments. We've been chatting a bit about what's happening in the real estate market from his perspective, and maybe where there's some opportunities and everything. So when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about what kind of investment you need to make to actually get into real estate, just to make sure that you can maybe make some extra money if you choose to do so. Or maybe just you're considering, what do you do next? You could be at the retirement point in your life and you're thinking, well, should I sell my house and maybe rent for a while? Or should I take my equity and invest it into real estate? Or maybe you're starting out and you're thinking, you know what? I'm not going to be able to afford a house right away. Maybe there's an opportunity for you to buy something, fix it up a bit and flip it. I don't know. You know, and I think Stefan actually understands this. He's a millennial that's been very successful. So when we return, we'll continue our conversation. Basically, what's going on in the real estate market and where are the opportunities at this point in time? And is it more local or is there an opportunity maybe more on a national or global basis? I suspect Stefan is a man in the know. This is Richard Land for Set for Success, and we'll be right back. Hello and welcome back. Having a great time chatting about real estate and real estate investments with Stefan Arnault. Stefan, you know, just before the break, I started to pose a question about investments, right? And you mentioned with the type of people that you actually work with. But I'm curious, it's just for the everyday listener. I mean, we have a lot of entrepreneurs listening in, a lot of career people who are looking for opportunities to do things. If they wanted to get into something, what kind of money should they come to the table with? And how do you answer that?
That's a very, very interesting question. I mean, if you're going to do it yourself, I mean, some people will go out there with 20 grand and they'll go buy a little house for $100,000 and they'll get some bank financing to do some renos, or maybe they throw it on a Rona card, a Rona or Home Depot store credit, and they'll start flipping houses with $20,000 and they'll go do it. The deals I've done over the years, I've done with none of my own money because I raise money from other people. And then there's people out there who have cash and they'll do it with all their cash at once. So I don't know if there's really a right answer to it. You know, there's that age old thing where you can have leverage, and if you have leverage, you're gonna have a higher return. But if you have leverage, you could also wipe yourself out. So there's you know, that's never going away.
Yeah, it's never going away, no matter what you do.
No matter what. And leverage is good because you can make really great returns, but at the same time, there's safety on the other side. If you do it all cash or if you stay smaller, you can control it better.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. I mean, it's one of those things. Now, when you say you bring investors together, do you just look for one single investor per product that you're working on, or do you sometimes do group investments where you have several people put in funds so you can actually leverage other people's monies, really?
Well, the way that I do it now is I work with, you know, one or two very rich people and they just fund everything. That's how I do it now. When I started, I was, you know, running around with friends and family and collecting this little bit of money and that little bit of money. And it's a lot of work and it's a lot of meetings and it's a lot of dinners and lunches and trust and lots of things. And I think that if you're going to do this as a business, the way I've done it, you want to get a couple big guys behind you and just do it like a business, like financing with a bank, right? Your business has financing or it doesn't. Running around and trying to finance little pieces at a time is a real pain in the neck.
Yeah, and so it's better to try to avoid that if you can.
Well, when you start, you know, when I started, I had lots of time and no money. And now I have some money and
no time.
So you get to pick which one do you want to do?
Yeah. And now, very kind of you, you actually laid on me a copy of your book, the $5 million book. This copy of $5 million book. And I hesitated on the last word.
Yeah, the word book.
Four letters. I messed that one up. Tell us a bit about that particular book. It's just coming out, isn't it? It's not even on the shelves yet, is it?
I'm not sure if it's on the shelves, actually. I publish it independently, so it might actually be on the shelves. I really am not paying attention to it because I sell it direct to the customers anyways.
Okay.
Yeah, we're actually selling about 10 a day right now, which is a lot.
Yeah, so, that's a lot of books to actually be selling. Yeah.
For books, books are interesting to sell. So we're selling quite a few. And the $5 million book is actually a republish of my original book I wrote that actually raised $5 million of cash.
Oh, wow.
So
that's pretty amazing.
I wrote a book and I wrote a book because I needed to raise money for my real estate business. So I thought I'll write a book and I'll hand it out or I'll sell it. And it had a name. The name of the book was Money People Deal, and people could never remember that title. So I rebranded it as the $5 million book because it raised $5 million of cash.
Okay.
And people who want to be real estate investors or are in real estate like this book because it talks a little bit about putting together joint ventures. It talks a little bit about raising money, a little bit about business models, a little bit of philosophy around real estate. And I think we've moved over 5,000 copies of the last version. And then we've got another 7,000 to move right now, and we'll probably be sold out by the end of the year. So this is a book that is all over Canada. People own it all over Canada. And even some people in the States, and I actually have people buy it in bulk too, because they like to give it out to their investors or their prospective investors who can invest with them.
Yeah, and there's some interesting actual chapters in here, or parts. I mean, it's broken down to three parts, the rules of the game, the deal maker, and also the execution. Out of those three areas, is there any particular area that is incredibly important to focus in on?
Well, I think part one is most important, you know, the rules of the game. If you got to know the rules of the game if you're going to play. You know, there's no game that you can play and not know the rules.
You know what? Yeah, I live in a very game-oriented family, and no doubt when we start off a new game, that's the first thing we have to do. We all have to study all the rules, so that's fair enough. I think that's fair enough.
Well, and it's like driving down the highway and not knowing the speed limit, you know? If you don't know the speed limit, you're going to get a ticket.
Especially in school zones right now, so slow down.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
So you talked a bit about the skills required to play the game. What in terms of you mean by that?
Well, I think that when people get into real estate investing, one thing that happens immediately is most people aren't trained to negotiate. And I see you got a cover of my next book, Get What You Want and Get Out. It's going to come out pretty soon. And that's all about negotiating. Negotiating is, I think, one of the most important skills in life. It's about asking for what you want and communicating what you want and making an offer. And we come from a school system that does not reward that. Could you imagine if you had 1,000 negotiators in a building? I mean, you'd have a hostage situation. So, you know, we have a school system, especially in Canada, that I think takes the negotiation out of the child. And we have a society of people that can't negotiate. And a lot of people, when they get into real estate, their contractors frisk them. The realtor frisks them. Every single person is frisking them. And at the end of the day, a lot of people don't make money in real estate because somebody else took their money at the negotiation table.
They gave it away. So if there was something people can do to actually improve their negotiation skills, what would that be?
Well, I think one of the biggest things that people have right away is they're afraid to ask. You know, we want to be liked. We want to have friends. We want people to like us. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if they like us or not. You have to ask for what you want in life. You know, you have to be able to ask and present a clear offer. And, you know, sometimes one of the things I have students of mine do, if they want to do real estate with me, I say, you're going to go make 50 phone calls and 10 offers. And they go, oh my God, what if they don't take my offer? Well, you want to get probably at least 7 no's and 3 counters. You know, you want to get rejected a lot, and people are afraid of rejection. They're afraid of other people judging them. They're afraid of lowballing, whatever that means. Everybody's highballing you, but you might as well come in a little bit lower. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, we have this very perverse, backwards idea of how negotiating should go in Canada. Like, we walk into Walmart, it says $3.33 for chocolate, and we just pay it.
Yeah.
We don't negotiate with Walmart. Now, Walmart negotiated the hell out of the chocolate company in a back room somewhere, but we don't negotiate because we see the sign and we pay it because we were taught to do that.
Well, it's great that you'd use that example, because look at Walmart, what Walmart's doing with Visa right now. They've basically closed Visa out of one of their stores and planning on doing it right across the rest of the province. So,
is that for merchant fees?
Yeah, merchant fees.
Yeah, right? Well, Costco, they do that. They don't allow Visa in. They only have one MasterCard.
Yeah, MasterCard.
And it has to be the Costco MasterCard. And Costco runs, I've heard, on a 2% profit. So they do billions and billions of dollars of sales, and they make 2% on that. And that's a massive a negotiating thing where they have all these products they're moving for no money.
Yeah. This is Richard Land. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Stefan regarding investments in real estate. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm chatting today with Stefan Arneau. He is a real estate guru, fortunate enough to be a Winnipegger, homegrown boy. Is that true?
Born and raised.
And Stefan has sort of stepped out with very little money. And in a very short period of time, 7 or 8 years, he built his own company. Now, Stefan, just before the break, we were talking about negotiating. And I've been playing around with a couple of your books. And you know, I've read them. And I know that you have this new one coming out called Get What You Want and Then Get Out, the book on negotiating to win the business and in life. Tell us a little bit more about that one. I know that you started to speak on the negotiating side of the equation just before the break.
Well, I started training people in real estate investing, and I noticed that most people were horrible negotiators. Unless they were in a business where they were negotiating every day, which most people aren't.
Yeah.
A lot of people are having trouble getting deals. So someone signed up to one of my programs and they'd have trouble getting deals. So I came up with a negotiating program to train them how to negotiate. And then I've also come out with a book because, you know, typically people start out with a book and then they get into a more high price program with bigger results. So it was something I never woke up in the morning when I was a little boy and said, I want to teach negotiation when I grow up. But it was I'm an entrepreneur and I fill needs in the marketplace, right? So, you know, the first book there you have there, that was created to raise money. I needed money. That was the need. Second book that we talked about last year was Self-Made, and people asking, tell me about your story. How'd you start with $1,200 of cash and you've done all this real estate? How'd you do it? You don't use your own money. So I wrote that filled the need. And the need on this book is people are horrible at negotiating in Canada and the US and most Western countries. And, you know, they need some sort of guidelines. They need some sort of training on negotiating to make money in real estate or in business or in life. Anywhere you have to negotiate.
So what are some of the tips you might be able to give, even with like 3 tips or 4 tips for our listeners to how to actually improve their negotiation capabilities?
Well, the book's called Get What You Want and Get Out.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you take one thing away from negotiating, it's once you have what you want, it's time to end it. You know, I think one thing people do is they start negotiating and they take it too far and then they lose the whole deal because they're trying to take the other side's money, right? You know, there's an old Jewish wisdom. Now, I'm not Jewish, but old Jewish wisdom is count your money, don't count their money.
Oh, okay.
So yeah. Don't take it too far. That's the first thing. I think another thing that's very important is you want to ask and make an offer. You know, a lot of people, I think, don't want to ask. They don't want to make the offer. They don't want to insult the other person. And there's nothing wrong with asking for something that you truly want. I mean, you know, one day I'll have children. I'm going to teach them how to ask for what they want. And children usually ask for what they want anyways. And
somewhere
in the school system, it gets beaten out of them.
Okay.
Right. Another thing that I think is really powerful for negotiating is having clear written goals before you go in. You know, you got it written down in advance. One thing that happens, we get emotional when we're negotiating, and sometimes we start going for things that we actually never wanted in the first place. But if you're not written down, you know, you're going to start asking for things that make no sense. I mean, I went in to buy a condo at half price a while ago. I ended up buying the lady's furniture too, and then I'm looking at this furniture and I'm thinking, what am I doing?
Why did you buy the furniture?
Well, I wanted it, but it wasn't really part of what I went in there for, you know.
Okay.
And we don't know our own minds. You know, our minds are so powerful that sometimes you go in for one thing and you come out with another.
I guess we get sort of fooled in thinking we need certain things when maybe we don't.
A lot of it's just a pure emotion, right? It's just emotions, emotions, emotions. And, you know, there's 3 parts of the brain. There's the reptile brain at the very bottom of the brain, and that's really what controls our decisions, and that's fear and greed.
Okay.
So, you know, maybe you just get greedy and you just want things because the reptile says so.
I was checking out your Facebook page, and there's a proverb, a Chinese proverb, written in your office.
Yeah,
on the boardroom. And it says, if you want 1 year of prosperity, grow crops. If you want 10 years of prosperity, grow trees. And if you want 100 years of prosperity, grow people. In what way do you fulfill that prophecy or proverb every single day? Like, what is it? What does that mean to you? Where did it come from? And what do you do to fulfill that?
Well, I've fallen into a very very strange business. It's a unicorn business. It's a business that I don't think anybody could just start up or anybody could just succeed at. And you know, initially I was flipping real estate to survive and to live. And I became successful at it. I started to win awards. I won Rich Dad International Hall of Fame 2014. I've been featured in magazines, all sorts of success. And people started contacting me for coaching and mentoring. And initially, I didn't want to do that. I said, no, I don't want to be a coach. I don't want to mentor anybody. I think it's a scummy industry. I don't want to be in it. And what's happened over time is the phone calls happen every day. Somebody wants some help. And now I have a training company. So, you know, we've released a couple books. We have a couple training programs. I have some coaching programs where people can flip their first deal and raise money, or they can become full-time professional. And so, you know, one thing that we believe is, or I believe at least, is that if you want to be in business, you need to grow yourself.
Okay.
You know, some people say, I want money for my deals. Well, okay, are you going to invest in yourself and grow yourself to the point where someone wants to give you money? Or are you just wanting something for nothing?
Yeah, fair enough.
So I think that growing yourself and growing people is the biggest investment anybody can make. You know, you can look at countries around the world. A country like Finland right now has a great education system. That country is doing great things. You look at a country like the United States, they have a huge problem. Their education's horrible. And that's a country in decline right now.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny you would say use those two examples because, I mean, even the politician in the United States clearly speak about the decline in terms of the education and what's happening.
Well, it's horrible. I mean, think about this. You go to, you know, a student right now in the United States pays $300,000 to go to a university. They come out, they're going to work at McDonald's because there's no job for them. They have a debt that's unforgivable and unbankruptable. You can't bankrupt your way out of it. And it's a $1 trillion scam right now, right? And something that I've started to muse upon and get excited about is creating a program that somebody in 5 years can go from zero to millionaire and have a program that competes with the university, where instead of going to university, why don't I teach you how to be an entrepreneur? We build some businesses and we flip some real estate.
I think that's fair enough. Actually, the entrepreneurial training is important. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about how somebody can connect with you. This is Richard Land for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, it's Richard Land for Set for Success. What a show we've been having. I've been hanging out here with a business associate and a friend of mine, Stefan Arnio. He is an investment guru in terms of the real estate industry, and he's also gotten into the training side of the equation too, helping people, I guess, really investing in their success. Stefan, if there was a final thought, what would that be?
Well, I think that your number one investment is you, and your number one investment is your education. And no matter what you're doing, if you're in a business or an entrepreneur, if you want to invest in real estate, you have to invest in your education first, because that's something no one can ever take away from you. And it's also, I believe, the fastest return. You know, rather than investing in a building or investing in something, some kind of hard asset, investing in your knowledge is always going to pay the best
dividends. Always going to pay your dividends. If somebody wanted to get in touch with you and talk to you about your business and what you do, how would they go about doing that?
They can contact me through my website. That's stefanarnio.com, StefanArnio.com. And that's two A's.
So that's the best way to do it. This is Richard Lannan. Stefan, I want to thank you for joining me today. And of course, audience-wise, I want to thank you for listening in. If you have an idea for a show or some thoughts, just send me a message at richard@setforsuccess.ca or check me out at setforsuccess.ca. Also, I always like you to remember this. Do your best. Invest in the success of others and make your journey count.